The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. It is Monday, May 20th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and I have to open the show today on an unfortunate bit of news. Legendary keyboardist for The Doors, Ray Manzarek, has passed away at the age of 74. Ray has a special meaning in my life in that he and I were in the film A Normal Life, the documentary on normal reformers, and I got to meet Ray Manzarek at the Normal National Conference at which that documentary was filmed. Thanks to Ray Manzarek, I have a Kevin Bacon number of 3, thanks to the links between me and Manzarek that lead to Rob Zombie, that lead to Kevin Bacon. So, What a sad day. Sad to see that Ray Manzarek has passed away, joining that incredible lineup of performers up in heaven or wherever you think they are that are having an amazing jam session right now. Oh, boy. All right. So for today's show, we have got Kevin Kloh from Philly Normal. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right, but we'll make sure that we get that right when we talk to him. He was at the most recent Smokedown Prohibition rally in Philly with Adam Kokesh. You may know him as the libertarian talk show host of Adam versus the Man. Also a little bit controversial. He's the one that's calling for an open carry of loaded weapons for 4th of July in Washington, D.C. So he's generated a lot of heat about that. We'll talk to Kevin about that rally, what happened with Adam, and what the latest status is on the case. Also, our Dr. Christian Thurstone, you know Dr. Chris out there in Denver, Colorado, one of Colorado's largest rehab business owners and an opponent of Amendment 64. We've been following this post he wrote called Higher and Higher, where he worried about kids injecting THC. Well, while I was paying so much attention to that reefer madness, I kind of glossed over another little bit of reefer madness. Luckily, one of his commenters, Old Hippie, picked up on it. We're going to talk about that in Behind the Headlines today. Also, we've got our Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes. I'm going to bring out an old classic from the Fraternity of Man. And we've got your 420 radio headlines. There's an election coming up tomorrow in a lot of places in America, including Los Angeles, California, where there are 3 different bills for regulation of the medical marijuana dispensary industry there. So check that out in our news. We'll talk about Adam Kokesh. We got the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment on deck now. And the Republic of Georgia might come up with better marijuana laws than the United States. Stick around. It's all coming up next.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisements because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
Greatest threats to liberty has been the government taking people's liberty for things that people are in favor of. The Pew Research Group shows that 52% of Americans think marijuana should not be illegal. And yet there are people in jail, and your Justice Department is continuing to put people in jail for sale and use. on occasion, of marijuana. That's something the American public has finally caught up with. It was a cultural lag, and it's been an injustice for 40 years in this country to take people's liberty for something that was similar to alcohol. You have continued what is allowing the Mexican cartels power and the power to make money, ruin Mexico, hurt our country by having a prohibition in the late 20th and 21st century. We saw it didn't work in this country in the 20s. We remedied it. This is the time to remedy this prohibition. And I would hope you would do.
Hi, this is Dan Michaels. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit danmichaelsaudio.com for more information.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, May 20th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Adam Kokesh arrested at marijuana rally from U.S. News & World Report. Adam Kokesh, the libertarian talk show host and activist who encouraged gun owners to march on Washington with loaded guns this July 4th, was arrested in Philadelphia on Saturday while participating in a smoke-down prohibition rally, according to his staff. Kokesh is being held at a federal detention center on charges of resisting arrest and will go before a judge today. Kokesh has participated in past smoke-down prohibition rallies, as well as a number of anti-war protests, as a member of the group Iraq Veterans Against the War. A Marine corporal in the Iraq War, Kokesh was honorably discharged after he brought a pistol home when his first tour concluded. He was then assigned general discharge after he wore his uniform during an anti-war protest, according to Fox News. Three medical marijuana measures on the Tuesday ballot from NBC Los Angeles, an issue that politicians have tried for years to resolve, how to regulate Los Angeles's medical marijuana dispensaries, will be on the ballot Tuesday when voters decide on three measures involving the number of dispensaries and sales taxes. Measure D would restrict the number of medical marijuana dispensaries to the original 135 approved before a 2007 requirement that dispensaries register with the city. The measure would apply a tax of $60 for every $1,000 in sales. A rival proposal was placed on the ballot after a signature drive. Measure F would allow for unlimited dispensaries and call for a 20% sales tax. The measure would require worker background checks and several stringent requirements, according to supporters. Proponents also claim zoning language, which outlines where dispensaries could operate in the measure, ensures the number would be limited to about 400. A third measure would, like Measure D, cap the number of dispensaries at 135, but appears to have little chance of passing. Measure E, which includes no new taxes, was placed on the ballot by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which has since withdrawn support and backed Measure D. The measure with the most votes wins, but only if it collects a majority of the vote. If no measure gains more than 50% of the vote, the issue could return to the Los Angeles City Council. Attorney General certifies Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment from Cleveland Scene. Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine certified more than 1,000 valid signatures brought forth by the Ohio Rights Group with the intent to put a ballot measure before the voters sometime in the future. That ballot measure would revolve around legalizing medical and therapeutic marijuana, as well as industrial hemp. The next step for the group is approval from the Ohio Ballot Board, which will meet May 23rd. Then the group must collect at least 385,253 signatures from registered Ohio voters. Mary Jane Borden, Secretary and Treasurer of Ohio Rights Group, says the group has not announced whether it will seek a ballot measure in 2013 or 2014, though the time frame suggests a run toward 2014. Also in the legislative branch of Ohio state government, State Representative Robert Hagan, a Youngstown Democrat, has introduced two bills in the State House that would legalize marijuana use in Ohio. Georgia considers taking softer approach to marijuana from RFERL.org. Marijuana users in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia face a year in prison and stiff fines if they are caught with more than 2 grams of the drug. They also could be sentenced up to 3 months of community service. Those strict measures became law in 2006 when President Mikhail Saakashvili was at the height of his power. But Georgia's new ruling coalition, led by Prime Minister Bidzina Ivanishvili, is considering taking a softer approach. New legislation is expected to be introduced in the country's parliament later this month. Georgian Labor, Health and Social Affairs Minister David Sergeyenko said dealing with drugs effectively requires a well-controlled strategy, and that decriminalization of marijuana could be part of the strategy. David Otashvili, who heads Alternative Georgia, a non-governmental addiction research center, predicts a bill will be submitted to a parliamentary subcommittee by the end of May, calling for prison sentences in marijuana cases to be removed from the penal code. Quinn to keep open mind about medical marijuana bill from CBS Chicago. Governor Pat Quinn says he's reviewing a bill that would legalize medical use of marijuana. The Democrat told the City Club of Chicago on Monday he's, quote, open-minded, end quote, on the issue, but wouldn't say if he'll sign it into law. The Illinois Senate approved the bill Friday. Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon said she supports it. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, May 20th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at the latest post from Dr. Christian Thurstone, the Denver rehab owner, who claimed kids may be trying injection THC use because there's so much THC in their urine. We'll get behind the headlines and show you the science to explain why Dr. Thurstone doesn't know what he's talking about. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back after this.
Pipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go!
On an all-new intervention.
Mark, welcome home.
Please, come.
Join us.
Mark hasn't smoked weed in about 10 days, and I'm worried about him. I can't watch him destroy himself.
I'm fine, okay? This is none of your business.
Shh. Come, Mark. We're only here because we care.
I'm in control. That's what they don't get, is that I can start smoking weed anytime that I want to. I just don't feel like it right now.
At first, he was, you know, just skipping a day here and there. But then it got more and more consistent, and then he just wasn't smoking any weed at all.
Mark, we haven't smoked a joint together in like 3 weeks, man. I don't know who you are anymore. Your short-term memory is incredible.
You know, I just can't sit back and watch someone destroy their own lives with horrible decisions.
See you guys.
Stupid, I'm getting out of here.
Hey,
don't touch me!
It hurts me a lot, you know? What do you do for someone that you care about that is ruining their own life? What do you do?
He's not showing any signs of starting.
Intervention on A&E.
Is that the Reaper Man?
That's the Reaper Man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
This is a Russ Belville Show.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. We're taking a look again at Dr. Christian Thurstone, one of Colorado's biggest marijuana rehab business owners. And longtime listeners to the show will know that I'm like a pit bull on a tire when I find some reefer madness. I just can't let it go. Now, Dr. Thurstone, if you don't know, he's one of Denver's largest rehab owners. He's also one of the strongest opponents of Colorado's legalization back when it was on the ballot. And then after it passed, he managed to get himself on the work group that was tasked for setting up the regulations, which strikes me a little like having Darth Vader drop the plans for Princess Leia's command center. But regardless, he got on. Anyway, he wrote this post called, Higher and Higher, where he worried about intravenous marijuana use. And this is because he was astonished at the rising levels of marijuana addiction among the teenagers that were forced into his rehab. So in his post, he says he collected data on the urinalysis of his patients and noted that, quote, the average rate was 358 nanograms per milliliter of urine in the 2007 to 2009 timeframe. Then he worries that the most recent data showed, quote, the average THC rate registered at 536 nanograms per milliliter of urine, end quote. And of course, those rising rates led Dr. Thurstone to wonder how much longer before we see injection use of THC. That's a quote. So I jumped all over the injection THC part because that's reefer madness. I mean, THC is fat soluble. It'd be next to impossible for the average user to be able to put it to any kind of formula that would be injectable. And besides, inhaling a vaporized cannabis concentrate gets more THC to your brain faster than injection would. Anyway, so what's the point? But as I was jumping on that part, the injection THC part, I kind of gave him a pass on his claim of detecting more than 300 nanograms of THC in his client's urine. Now, surely he meant THC-CU or carboxy-THC. That's the inert metabolite that is produced after THC has been metabolized by the liver after it's passed through the blood, and that's what's detectable on those urine screens. Active THC in urine is not how those tests work. Active THC you have to get from a blood test. And remember, in Washington and Colorado and Montana, they've set the standard for driving at 5 nanograms of inert metabolites in their urine. So, I'm sorry, 5 nanograms of active THC in the blood. Pardon me, I got it backwards. 5 nanograms of active THC in the blood. So we're supposed to believe that teenagers are walking around with 60 to 100 times the legal driving limit of THC in their urine? Well, while I was paying all the attention to the injectable THC, a commenter on his blog named Old Hippie jumped in with this question. I'd be interested to know whether those urinalysis results were for actual THC or for THC metabolites like 11-hydroxy-THC. To which Dr. Thurstone responds, quote, thanks for writing. Good question. We were measuring THC, end quote. Now, I consulted with a number of experts in the field of marijuana testing who, after they stopped laughing, explained the science quite simply. THC is measured in blood and wouldn't be present at these levels by former users in treatment anyway, one of them told me. Urinalysis measures carboxy THC, and such levels would be in line with past consistent use, end quote. So in other words, the 300 or the 500 he was getting, if he wants to say that's metabolites in urine, we can accept that. That might make sense. But THC in blood? Not at all. And this is kind of disturbing to me that somebody who wants to help write the regulations for legal marijuana in Colorado, someone who's in charge of rehabilitating youngsters who have been forced into his rehab for marijuana addiction, is openly lying or at best doesn't know the difference between active THC and the metabolites that are shown in urine tests. Now, as far as these urine analysis, keep in mind that the standard on most workplace tests and in sports is 15 nanograms per milliliter. So, yes, these kids are testing, you know, way high. But the World Anti-Doping Agency just moved their cutoff level from 15 nanograms to 150 nanograms out of concerns that they weren't actually catching people who were recently using marijuana. And to that end, I decided to look at some of the science. And you can find this at my blog at RadicalRust.com. Rocky Mountain Instrumental Laboratories, also from Colorado, which performs the kind of forensic toxicology that Dr. Thurstone claims to have conducted, explains that THC-CU or carboxy-THC levels are poor predictors of the recency and potency of marijuana use. And another study in 2010 in the Journal of Analytical and Bioanalytical Chemistry performed research on male athletes, and they tested THC, hydroxy-THC, and carboxy-THC, the inert metabolite, in the urine. And at best, when these guys were smoking a 7% THC cone, ingesting 70 milligrams of active THC, the average they got was around 245 nanograms for the next 10 days. And Thurstone's worried about 350 to 550. This guy's just smoking one 7% joint, who aren't regular marijuana smokers, and they're turning up in the 245 range. So just how awful is it? And in fact, one guy tested as high as 9,982.9 nanograms per milliliter. Wow. You can check out all the science. I've even got some really nice charts on this one at the blog at RadicalRust.com. But at this point, my nanograms per milliliter are way low.
I want to try and break 10,000.
We're going to try and break 10,000. We'll see what we can do.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Daddy thinks.
Funky Roller Ring, Roller Ring, Roller Ring.
Here at the Funky Roller Ring, it's always cool.
They call me cool. 'Cause I got more glide, my stride, more dip in my hip.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. Fun, fun.
And I wear a mean dark pair of shades. And you can't see my eyes. Unless my head is bent. No time, give me five. They call me cool.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everybody. 24 after the hour. And for today's Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes, I'm going to continue the tradition I started last week in going back into history, into the archives, and finding great marijuana songs that, for some reason, I have never played on this show. And this next one, I'm so glad to be playing this next one. It's from the Fraternity of Man, although a lot of people will attribute this song originally to the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. That's not the case. They were a cover band for this song. This is the original, the Fraternity of Man, with the all-time classic, Don't Bogart That Joint.
Don't
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Roll another one. Just like the other one. You've been hanging on to it. And I sure would like a hit. Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
Kids talk to about drugs. You? Or some guy? When your kids find out you've been lying to them about marijuana, who will they trust? Let's have a rational discussion about drug reform. Let's tax and regulate marijuana, restrict youth access, and create safer communities.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
All right, folks, welcome to our Activist Agenda. Today's segment is brought to you by Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy in the beautiful state of Wisconsin. So check them out for all of your needs. Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy. We're going to be joined by Kevin Clue. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce his name. As soon as we get him on the line here, having some difficulties with our Google Plus. So I'm going to have to go back to the old fashioned Skype and see what we can get him here. We're going to talk about the recent rally they had in Philadelphia, the anti-prohibition rally that they had going on there. And Adam Kokesh, who's with Adam and the Man, made some headlines for getting arrested at this event. We've got Kevin on the line now. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. And could you pronounce your last name for us? Because I'm not sure how to go with that.
Sure, Clow.
Clow, okay. Kevin Clow, the executive director of Philly Normal's on the line, and thank you for joining us. Tell us about this protest that you had this weekend, because I understand this is like a regular event for you guys.
Yeah, this is the fifth Smokedown Prohibition. We've had one every month for the last 5 months. The 420 event was very successful. We had 400 to 600 people come out. Every event we have, usually about 6 years per event, and then afterwards at 420, there's a moment of cannabis reflection.
All right, so this event was going down pretty much like the rest of them. Was there anything out of the ordinary about this one?
Yes, a lot out of the ordinary about this one. Every other event has gone very peacefully, and actually up until this event, we had zero arrests. But this event, when we arrived upon the scene and began setting up, we noticed there was a metal cage, like gate structure erected around People's Plaza there, and they had a sign posted on the fence saying that anyone with controlled substances would be arrested. And a lot more cops, there was police dogs walking around, and we knew that around 4:10, as like the cops approached us and became like a close circle around the group, that we're pretty certain arrests would be made.
Wow. So no prior announcement of this change in policy. Just had there been any indication that city leadership or anybody was upset about the previous rallies?
I received word that on the Facebook wall for the event that the federal rangers have been posting warnings, but I wasn't made aware of that fact until the day of the event.
So as far as jurisdiction, are we talking about city property, federal property? Where are you guys protesting at?
This is considered federal property. This is the area right outside of Liberty Bell, considered federal park land.
Okay, so we're talking about getting arrested by federal park rangers and federal charges then, right?
Yeah, that's correct. But one of the reasons we chose this site is that it is considered a First Amendment speech zone, and also anywhere else in the city of Philadelphia, a marijuana arrest would come with a custodial arrest being brought to the station, as well as fines, as well as a small amount of marijuana program. We've had a number of first-hand accounts of people being arrested for up to and half of marijuana at the federal park land there and receiving a $175 citation. And there were about 4 to 5 people at the event last Saturday that received that citation. But it was apparent at 4:20 that they were targeting Adam Kokesh and Eddie Poe and went right for them at 4:20.
Now, is there any indication, or do you guys just think that this may have something to do with his very controversial call for a open carry firearms rally on July 4th in Washington, D.C.?
Honestly, I don't buy that.
Okay.
I think it's more to do with a 420 event. Individuals from Repent America were covering her protest and saying that it's a crime against God to consume cannabis in the open. Mm-hmm. And they had a viral video that came out. If you Google Butler smoking marijuana, that video blew up. It was on Huffington Post, front page of Reddit, all over the internet. And I think it made the park rangers look very impotent. And I don't think they wanted to look that way again.
I see what it is. So it's just kind of a power trip that they're going through here.
Yeah, we felt very empowered that we had this event and that we were committing civil disobedience in a way that we felt was protected by the First Amendment. And in compliance with what they had there, I mean, the response to the videos was that we didn't have the manpower to deal with that. And I figured with the way budgets are for federal rangers and the way things had gone down before, that it would stay that way. But I guess someone wasn't really happy about what was happening and threw extra budget money to make this occur.
Now, in addition to Kokesh's arrest, were there any other arrests?
No other arrests, but there were other citations.
Okay, so let's get into Adam's case as much as we can anyway. Last thing I heard is he was still at a federal detention facility. What are the charges and what's next for Adam, as far as you know?
As far as I know, it's felony assault that he faces. He was granted a phone call today in court, and there'll be a hearing on Thursday to figure out what happens from here.
Wow. And so still being held, is there any indication that there'll be bond granted in this?
No indications yet.
Wow. So, you know, as far as the, you know, as far as the political aspects of this, I see this tie in to, you know, if they can keep him in holding through July, even that might have a serious impact on that planned rally of his. I just wonder how much of this has to do with it. I'll have to get some of his people on here to talk about that. Kevin, I want to talk also a little about, you know, just Philly Normal in general and what activities you guys have been up to. And if people want to get involved, how can they get in touch with you?
It's been a great year at Philly Normal other than this last Saturday. We have the first ever Mid-Atlantic Region Normal Conference hosted in Philadelphia. That was a great event. A lot of good networking, a lot of good people came out, a lot of good information, a lot of great speakers. And that kind of injected a lot of new energy into our group. That combined with the victories in Colorado and Washington, it's been a great year to be a cannabis advocate and activist. But with these Smokedown events and the conference, those are the biggest things that we've had this year, along with other smaller fundraisers. And we're hoping to get more involved with lobbying in Harrisburg. And we're setting up training for students for central drug policy for at least 4 to 5 of our board members.
Yeah, that's a great work that you guys have been doing. I've been following Philly Normal for a long time, and I know you did some great work in getting the city of Philadelphia to change the way it dealt with low-level marijuana possession. How do the chances look, and what sort of plans do you have at the state level? Are we talking decrim, medical, legalization? What's on your agenda?
Right now we're pushing for full legalization with Senate Bill 528. Dan Leach has authored that, and we have a few co-signers at this point. But it seems like the issue that we have every year in Pennsylvania is everything gets caught up in committee, and getting a vote out of committee is very difficult for us. I want to keep trying to raise awareness of the issue. We keep encouraging people to go to normal.org, check out the Take Action Center, and contact their representatives that way. And if they want to get more involved directly, check out PhillyNormal.org and our Facebook page. We post about all of our regular meetings there, first and third Thursday of the month in West Philly.
All right. And looking to the future here, you guys said you've been doing this Smokedown Prohibition rally monthly. In light of these changes, are you going to continue to hold these monthly rallies?
It looks like at this time we are. I can't say for certain at this point, but we have created something that's bigger than ourselves. We partnered with the Panic Hour, which is an NAPO's comedy troupe, and also the Philadelphia Hip Hop Society. So we're not the only organization responsible for this event, and we couldn't have done it without their help. And I think this kind of event belongs to the attendees now, and it's up to them what happens next. I really hope that all the Smokedowns in the future are completely safe. I really don't want to see arrests. And I hope that we have a safe, peaceful protest, and if that means that we have to not engage in a moment of cannabis reflection, then we'll do that. If that means that we have to maybe arrest ourselves and put ourselves in handcuffs before 420, maybe we'll do that too, so we're not stuck with resisting arrest.
There's an idea, self-handcuffing. Well, I've seen it in a movie or two, but nothing having to do with the protest. On another tack,
we're open to ideas at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Now, when Kokesh was arrested, did he have cannabis found on him?
I can't say for sure, but I did talk to his people, and I did talk to him before the event, and he said he was not planning on being arrested. And I have never seen Kokesh consume cannabis at any of our events. Every single time, his primary concern was filming and getting interviews with people. He was too busy doing that to really consume anything.
Yeah, so Adam's been a part of your rallies in the past, and this hasn't ever been an issue?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Wow, again, folks, we're talking about this Smokedown Prohibition rally in Philadelphia. It went down Saturday. They're doing it monthly. When's the next one going to take place?
I don't have a date at this time.
Oh, okay. So, but it is a monthly event, so if people go to phillynormal.org, they should be able to find out?
I recommend checking our Facebook wall for the most up-to-date information, but we should have it posted on our website as well.
Okay, Philly Normal on Facebook, and you can find more information about that. Have you managed to get in touch with the federal rangers, the Park Service there, to negotiate about this, to find out what their stance is, or we're just moving forward with the next rally and let the chips fall where they may?
I think they made it pretty clear at the last event what their stance is. If there is anyone smoking cannabis, they will be arrested. The part that doesn't make sense to me, though, is why the organizers were arrested, and that's really going to come out of court. And they're in the federal system now. I don't think the park rangers even really have much say in what happens with them now. But the key thing is that they believe that these individuals were resisting arrest. The videos are out there. People can make their own decisions about whether that was happening or not. And hopefully the judge or jury, when it comes to that, will see them and hopefully judge in our favor, because we don't believe that they were causing a problem at this time.
Well, what I've seen from the videos that are out there, I haven't seen much that falls under the category of resisting arrest, unless you want to, you know, split hairs here. But with this situation here, with this resisting arrest, with so none of the charges here had to do with open consumption of cannabis, or was that part of the original arrest?
It's my understanding at this time that those charges do not concern, but they're not having anything involving cannabis.
Wow. Okay, so resisting arrest and being arrested for what exactly?
That's what we're trying to figure
out. I wasn't sure if it was just me or if there was a hole in this story that needed filling. And that sounds like, you know, we're going to arrest you. If you're going to get a resisting arrest, you had to have been arrested for something. And I was under the assumption it was, you know, a smoke out. You know, you were smoking weed openly, but that's not the case.
And I've been in contact with Patrick Nightingale, too, of Pittsburgh Normal, who's a lawyer in Pennsylvania. And he asked me multiple times, like, was there a dispersal order? And there was not a dispersal order. I could see if there was a dispersal order, and the organizers were continuing to address the crowd and were continuing to use amplified audio to address the crowd, but there was no dispersal order.
Wow.
So I'm not sure how this is going to play out. I think Adam and Poe have a pretty good chance in court, but we'll see what happens when all the facts come out.
Well, this sounds like a serious First Amendment issue then to me, and it sounds to me as if you're being targeted for the content of your political protest, and that can't be allowed to stand.
Yeah, I mean, this issue has quickly turned into a civil disobedience, cannabis-related issue, into a First Amendment issue. The fact that we expected, and, you know, we're okay with, people that were consuming cannabis knew that they were going to get a citation. And it was our understanding with the involvement of park rangers in the past to be a $125 fine. And the majority of issues that day were the citations. But these two outliers still don't make any sense to me.
Wow. All right. So Kevin Clow, Executive Director of Philly Normal. You can find him at phillynormal.org, also on Facebook at Philly Normal. Anything else you'd like to tell our audience before we wrap this up?
If you want to help out Adam or NAPO, check out their respective websites, thepanichour.com and adamversusdemand.com. They are seeking donations, and if you use all the support that you get at this point. And if you're in the Philadelphia area and want to come out and show your support, I believe there's pretty much daily protest at the Federal Detention Center, 7th and Arch, until this issue is resolved.
All right. Yeah, let's get that taken care of. Make your voice heard. They can't be arresting us and, you know, ending our First Amendment rights just to protest for a change in the laws. And that's what Philly Normal and all the folks at Normal have been involved with for over 40 years now. Kevin, thanks for joining us and filling us in on the story. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Russ.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're going to, this one. We're going to be taking a look at a very interesting
We'll
situation.
Be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show.
You may remember me attacking Anna Canzano in Oregon.
You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Well, apparently Anna Canzano has a like-minded compatriot in Arizona. That's our radical rant. We'll be right back. Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Legalize me. Don't criticize.
Overjoyed. I've
been cannabis activist for 40 years.
We are turning the corner on a failed policy that's been disastrous for our communities, and things are going to get better.
80 years ago, we repealed alcohol prohibition in this state. We did it prior to the federal government, and we're doing the same thing when it comes to marijuana. We are a step ahead, and we will continue to lead the way.
It means I'm going to smoke a lot of weed tonight!
Some call it marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Some of them call it cannabis. Never mind. Legalize it.
Man, is that the reefer man?
That's the reefer man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
This is a Russ Belville Show news alert. Whatever you do, don't smoke pot. You don't want to turn out to be a loser, like Olympian Michael Phelps, actor Jack Nicholson, singer Miley Cyrus, rocket scientist Dr. Carl Sagan, pop star Rihanna, actress Cameron Diaz, country legend Willie Nelson, President Barack Obama, Cy Young pitcher Tim Lincecum.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man? If he says he swam to China and he sells you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
And over 100 million other Americans.
Have you ever met funny reefer man? If he says he walks the ocean anytime he takes a notion, then you know you're talking to...
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended the Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, for this next one, you'll have to recall that I did this before here in Oregon with one of our K2 reporters who went by the name of Anna Song back then. She's recently gotten married. Her name's Anna Canzano now. But in her investigation, turns out that she's had multiple car wrecks and had a painful back from these multiple car wrecks and scoliosis that she was born with. And then talked about that to a medical marijuana clinic and got her recommendation for chronic pain. And this was to show, you know, that that it's so easy to get a medical marijuana card. And I kind of laughed at it and made a video on it and thought, you know, that would be enough. I thought that would be enough to shame some of these news organizations. But no, they're using the same exact play over at CBS 5 in Phoenix. Now, the reporter there's by the name of Morgan Lowe, and what he did, this was a segment that they put on the evening news in Arizona to talk about how it's only the young and healthy people, it's mostly young and healthy people getting their medical marijuana cards. It's not really for the sick and dying, right? So to prove this, Morgan Lowe, this reporter, went undercover and told a doctor he's had back pain for months. Pain, he said, was distracting. Said it limits his ability to run. Then later, after he gets his card, in the gotcha moment, he goes back to that doctor as a reporter and says, I mean, really, does that qualify, really? A sore back? Well, the guy went to a chiropractor's office complaining about pain he's had for months. Then he complained about that pain to his doctor, about this pain that had lasted for months, and then said it was chronic and severe pain, and checked a box on the application for medical marijuana for severe and chronic pain, and a form that says the information provided in the application is true and correct. So basically, he told Arizona that he had severe and chronic pain, and he was able to get a medical marijuana card for severe and chronic pain. Wow, what a scandal. But yeah, this is his typical this is the typical fight that we get, the typical propaganda that we get from some of the local news organizations. Now, this was also followed up by another post. I'm getting a lot of this from the Phoenix New Times website. So good stuff here. And they point out, you know, they're trying to say how they have this investigation on medical marijuana. And while it was sold as for cancer, AIDS, and glaucoma, 90% of the people are getting it for severe and chronic pain. And in fact, I'll show you the graphic here from the CBS station. This is the severe and chronic pain, you know. Here we go. Patient medical certification, severe chronic pain. This is what they had on the CBS 5 News out there in Phoenix, showing everybody, trying to, you know, give them the propaganda that it's all about severe and chronic pain. But that's just false. The Arizona Department of Health Services, let me give you his quote first. His quote is, 90% of the certifications are for severe and chronic pain, not cancer, AIDS, glaucoma, ALS, or any of the other specific illnesses that qualify someone for medical marijuana, end quote. Well, that's false. In the Arizona Department of Health Services, they have the statistics for the medical marijuana program. 71.57% of the people in the state's medical marijuana program cited chronic pain as their only debilitating condition. And a little less than 20% of the cardholders have two conditions, which means they do have cancer, AIDS, glaucoma, ALS, Crohn's, severe muscle spasm, Hep C, Alzheimer's. And guess what? Those diseases cause a little bit of pain. So the other thing he likes to say is that this is Morgan Lowe, the propagandist for the Phoenix CBS 5 News, said, quote, there are more 18 to 30 year olds with medical marijuana cards than in any other age group. But what he didn't tell people is that the other age groups are 10 year ranges. So, yes, there are more people between the ages of 18 and 30 than there are between the ages of 31 and 40. He also likes to say nearly half of the cardholders are under 40. So clearly more than half are older than 40, right? So this is the story on CBS 5. And the final part of this, to add icing to the cake here, the CBS 5 reporter gets congratulated by the Pinal County attorney. Pinal County, the county that, you know, Phoenix is located, right? The county attorney, Lando Voiles, wrote a thank you note to CBS 5. He says, I thank you and Morgan Lowe for your investigation and reporting of the failures of the Arizona medical marijuana program and its apparent criminal consequences. As stated in the story, qualifying cardholders claiming severe and chronic pain account for 90% of all cardholders and those applying and receiving cards, 90% of all cardholders and those applying and receiving cards. 18 to 30 year olds represent the largest demographic holding medical marijuana cards, and nearly half are under 40 years old. This represents a significant failure in the program, which remains in violation of federal laws, as marijuana possesses no federally recognized medicinal use. Due to KPHO-TV CBS 5's airing of the story and exposing systematic problems with the program, the public is more aware of loopholes enabling apparent recreational use of marijuana, a Schedule 1 substance. Thank you, and please let me know if I may provide you with information on this matter, as the flawed implementation of this federally illegal matter impacts our communities by encouraging marijuana usage with our youth and organized crime on our streets. All right, so now you've got the politics mixing with the media here to spread a disinformation campaign about the Arizona medical marijuana program. First of all, it's getting tougher and tougher for me to come back to these medical marijuana arguments because I'm so past medical marijuana at this point. I'm so tired of hashing out and drawing the lines between who's, you know, sick and debilitated enough to not put in a cage and who's healthy and young enough to go ahead and ruin their lives over marijuana use. This continued use of the medical marijuana aspect of this fight continues to divide us, and it continues to shore up their point that marijuana is bad. It continues to shore up their point that marijuana use must be reduced or stopped. When we say medical use of marijuana, we're again going back to the why, and we're trying to come up with an excuse that it's okay to use this bad, evil, wicked thing. And so long as we continue to do that, we will continue to end up in these situations where we have to fight rear guard actions to defend the beachhead that we've established with medical marijuana. 90% of cardholders are getting it for chronic pain. No, it's really only 75%. How does that help our argument a whole bunch? So now we have to admit 3 out of 4 people are getting it for chronic pain when they've set up the frame that getting it for chronic pain is somehow a fraud, a fake, a sham, or a bad thing. When in scientific reality, we've got more peer-reviewed research documenting the use of marijuana for chronic pain than just about any condition outside of nausea. There's more definite scientific evidence, especially for things like neuropathic pain. But so long as we have to fight in this medical marijuana playground, we have to say, no, it's real chronic pain. It's really, really bad chronic pain. And then the game becomes, well, how bad is your chronic pain? Then it becomes an evaluation of just how miserable are you? And again, some people whose pain may not be so devastating, but is greatly relieved by marijuana, get left behind, get thrown under the bus, if you will. So it's hard for me to keep coming back to this, but I will for a second here. The whole chronic pain issue for this guy, what he has to understand is that you have to provide documentation of this. This reporter went to his chiropractor and he went to document that he had this bad pain in his back, this recurrent pain. And then he had to go to a medical marijuana clinic and see that doctor and have that reviewed. And in doing so, the guy created jobs. The guy contributed to the economy. There's a chiropractor who made some money. There's a clinic doctor who made some money. And at least now, the guy, let's assume there is somebody out there who's faking it to get a medical marijuana card. Okay, so before, the guy who was faking it never interfaced with a single doctor, never paid a dime to the state, and was a complete mystery. We don't know where he is until we catch him with some weed, and then we got to pay for his room and board, then we got to put him into trial, then we got to take him to jail, then we got to book him and fingerprint him and take a cop off the streets for 2 hours to deal with all of that. That was the before. Now, you got a guy going to a chiropractor, a doctor, paying a fee to a state, shopping at a state-run dispensary where they can have some control, where the money from that is definitely not going to go to the black market. And this is somehow a bad thing. This is why I get so frustrated with the people who claim any sort of shenanigans with a medical marijuana program, because even worst case scenario of what you're thinking someone's trying to get away with, smoking pot recreationally under the guise of a medical program, is far less shenanigans than what's going on right now when somebody's smoking pot illegally and getting away with it. Nothing we have done has stopped people from smoking marijuana. They have death penalty in some Middle Eastern countries and in Southeast Asian countries for the trafficking and possession of marijuana. And yet, they have to keep using it because people still smoke it. We can either be free or we can be drug-free, but we can't be both. And especially when we are talking about something with such a limited range of harm as cannabis and such a great degree of good, industrially, medically, scientifically, recreationally, just to mellow this country out a little bit, we don't have to be making medical excuses anymore. It's time for us to just stand up and say enough of this dickering over who's qualified to smoke pot. If I'm qualified to drink Bacardi 151, I'm qualified to smoke pot. If I'm qualified to buy a carton of Marlboros, I'm qualified to smoke pot. Using the pot is far less worse for myself and society than any of those two legal drugs. So there is no legitimate logical reason, and so long as we continue on the medical marijuana path, on the decriminalization path, we continue to pick away at it, we're continuing to build up their side that there's something wrong with it. All right, we got to take it into hour two here. Thanks for joining us. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Stick around. Hour two is next. Coming up at 5, Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Coming up at 8 o'clock, New Viper Hour. Movie night, we've got Protect Your Daughters. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. We love you.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you